Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Funny Money is a nonfiction account by Mark Singer that reconstructs the rise and collapse of Penn Square Bank, a small Oklahoma City institution whose aggressive energy lending helped expose major weaknesses in the American banking system during the early 1980s. Originally written from Singer's reporting for The New Yorker, the book is less a technical banking manual than a vivid chronicle of how boom conditions, weak underwriting, and institutional overconfidence can combine into systemic failure. Its subject reaches beyond one failed bank. It shows how local speculation in oil and gas reverberated through larger banks that bought Penn Square loans and later suffered severe losses. The book is also notable for its attention to character, regional culture, and the psychology of dealmaking. Rather than treating the collapse as a simple fraud story, Singer presents it as a study of incentives, social ambition, and the unstable relationship between credit growth and apparent prosperity. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, how Penn Square turned an Oklahoma oil boom into a banking disaster. The central event in Funny Money is the collapse of Penn Square Bank after it loaded its balance sheet with energy-related loans during the early 1980s oil boom. Singer shows how rising oil prices and the belief that petroleum wealth would keep expanding encouraged lending standards that would have looked reckless in normal conditions. The book makes clear that the bank did not fail simply because the energy market turned. It failed because its lending was built on inflated expectations and thin underwriting. This distinction matters because it reveals the deeper mechanism of the disaster boom conditions can create the illusion that collateral, growth, and repayment capacity are stronger than they really are. Singer uses the Penn Square case to demonstrate that financial institutions often confuse momentum with safety. The result is a collapse that feels sudden only in hindsight, when the assumptions that supported the lending structure are exposed as fragile. Secondly, loan syndication as a mechanism for spreading hidden risk. A major analytical thread in the book is Penn Square Bank's use of loan syndication, in which it originated loans, kept only a small share, and sold most of the exposure to larger banks. This arrangement made Penn Square look more active and profitable than it really was, because it could collect fees without retaining most of the risk. Singer's treatment of this practice is important, because it shows how financial intermediaries can detach origination from accountability. When a bank can pass along the bulk of a loan, it has less reason to scrutinize the borrower carefully. The book therefore exposes an incentive problem rather than just an individual failure of judgment. Its relevance extends beyond the 1980s because the same basic tension appears whenever financial products are packaged, distributed, and resold faster than their underlying risks can be evaluated. Singer's account is valuable precisely because it makes this structure understandable through a concrete historical case rather than abstract theory. Thirdly, Okiesmo and the culture of charisma, swagger, and grift. Singer coined the term Okiesmo to describe the blend of charisma, hubris, and opportunism he observed in the Oklahoma oil world surrounding Penn Square. This idea gives the book more than historical value. It provides a cultural lens for understanding why certain excesses seemed normal to the people involved, rather than presenting the participants as faceless financiers. Singer examines the social style of the boom private planes, expensive dinners, and a confidence that success in one cycle justified ever larger bets in the next. Okiesmo is not merely a colorful label. It captures how regional boosterism and personal bravado can blur into a tolerance for weak standards and inflated claims. By focusing on this culture, the book argues that financial failure is often social before it is numerical. People do not only misread markets, they also perform belonging, status, and toughness in ways that make caution appear naive. That insight gives the book a sharper human dimension than a conventional banking history. Fourthly, why the collapse of a small bank threatened the wider U.S. banking system. Funny Money matters because Penn Square's failure did not remain local. The larger lesson of the book is that a small institution can transmit damage widely when other banks rely on its judgment and buy its loans. Singer places Penn Square in a broader financial chain that helped weaken major banks, including Continental Illinois, which later required government support. This makes the book a study of interdependence in banking. One weak link can become a systemic event when confidence, funding, and asset quality are tied together. The story is especially instructive because it shows that systemic risk does not require sophisticated derivatives to emerge. It can arise from old-fashioned commercial lending when credit expands too quickly and lending standards deteriorate. Singer's account therefore reads as a warning about concentration, contagion, and the false comfort of scale. A bank can seem small enough to ignore until its practices have already been embedded in the balance sheets of institutions much larger than itself. Lastly, a reporter's narrative history that values people, not just balance sheets. One of the book's distinguishing features is its journalistic method. Singer originally covered the events as a reporter, and the finished book retains the immediacy of a reconstructed news story while still offering a clear interpretive frame. Instead of building a dense financial treatise, he emphasizes personalities, local color, and the social atmosphere around the bank's rise and fall. That approach makes the book accessible to readers who may not be specialists in banking history, while still preserving the seriousness of the subject. The advantage of this style is that it shows how financial outcomes are shaped by human behavior, not only by charts and legal documents. The limitation is that readers seeking a full technical examination may find it lighter than a specialized history of banking regulation or credit markets. But that is also what makes it distinctive. It turns a major banking failure into a readable case study of ambition, denial, and institutional weakness without losing sight of the larger economic stakes. In conclusion, Funny Money will be most useful to readers interested in financial history, banking crises, energy booms, and the social world that develops around speculative excess. It is especially well-suited to people who want to understand how a seemingly local failure can become a broader systemic problem, and why periods of rapid credit growth so often produce similar patterns across different eras. Readers with an interest in journalism will also value the book for its reporting-driven style and its ability to make institutional failure legible through character place and timing. What distinguishes it from many books on financial scandals is that it is not written primarily as a technical postmortem or a legal indictment. Instead, it combines narrative clarity with an anthropological eye for the culture of boomtime Oklahoma. That mix makes the book memorable. It explains the mechanics of collapse while also showing the attitudes and social pressures that made the collapse feel normal until it was too late. It remains a useful reminder that the most dangerous financial mistakes often look ordinary while the boom is still intact. If you would like to support Mark Steers, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.